Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast.
I don't think when people say, well, online learning is self-paced, I don't see what I do as self-paced.
That's David Staloff, professor of education and director for the Center of Educational Excellence at Eastern Connecticut State University. It's from his interview with John Bucher at the EDUCAUSE 2009 annual conference. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE, and this conference podcast is sponsored by Juniper Networks and Quest Communications International. You can find more podcasts like this by searching for EDUCAUSE on iTunes or by visiting www.educause.edu/podcasts.
Thanks for joining us today, David.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Eastern Connecticut State University has recently gone through some strategic planning, which included a digital portfolio graduation requirement. And then a whole host of mitigating factors hit. Could you tell us a bit about the plan and its development?
Dr. Elson Yunez became president at Eastern about 4 years ago. We were due for a strategic plan, but a new president usually likes to have strategic planning. And so we went through a very inclusive process and developed a series of strategic goals. And one of them was that every student graduating from Eastern would graduate with a digital portfolio as a requirement. It would be a graduation requirement. The strategic plan was submitted to our university governance process, the University Senate, passed by our Senate, from our Senate to the President. She signed it, and she took it to the Board of Trustees of our system, and they supported it too. The following year, though, was implementation time, and when the goal for the strategic plan for digital portfolios came forward, there were a few faculty that objected to it. They didn't want to impose any more graduation requirements on our students. And I quickly recognized that it would be difficult to have digital portfolios as a graduation requirement with this faculty resistance. So we moved towards holding that the strategic plan is a strategic plan. We couldn't change that.
Right.
But having a five-year phased-in process, the faculty would hopefully, everyone would buy in at the end of 5 years.
Now, the e-portfolios, what little bit I know about them, they're not all created equal. I mean, different campuses use e-portfolios in different ways. So I take it that your original plan was to have specific things in the portfolio.
Yeah.
And that's what caused some objection, apparently.
Well, that it was a graduation requirement was a major objection.
Okay.
That the student would have to produce something, anything.
Right.
Was the objection.
But this was more than just a collection of projects and papers. This had some defined content.
Right.
Into it.
But
yeah.
but minimal in a lot of ways, and we're working on it. We're still not sure how to define it, and we also recognize that departments may have different needs.
And so it's going to evolve over the next few years for sure.
And it is a flexible. Portfolios are flexible. We, last year, in the process of trying to get faculty buy-in, we brought in Helen Barrett. Helen is pretty well recognized as being one of the key leaders in electronic portfolio. She's from the University of Alaska. In fact, if you go to our website, the ePortfolio website that we have at Eastern, on that site, that page, prototype electronic portfolio page, there's a link to Helen Barrett's visit to Eastern, where she speaks for about an hour, really explaining what electronic portfolios are. And you're right, electronic portfolios come in all kinds of sizes and shapes and descriptions, and they do all kinds of different purposes. Often the question, when people start with electronic portfolio, often the first question is not how can we help students learn better or how can we help them enhance their professional development. The first question is, what's the platform? And then the second question is, how much does it cost?
Okay.
And who's going to make sure it runs on our campus? And Helen will say that there are two purposes for electronic portfolios. One is for an individual to document their development. The other one is for programs and courses to assess. And she believes, and I agree with her, that the most worthwhile thing for electronic portfolio is the individual's development. And
sure.
The student should control the portfolio, and it should have the flexibility to be a creative project for students.
Well, in its simplest form, it's a coherent collection of the student's work over a period of time,
right,
making it easy for them to be able to present to somebody.
Right. So, and also a very important thing from my point of view is that the individual spends time to reflect on their change.
Right.
By looking
right
at the documents.
Let's talk a little bit about online learning environments for teacher education. If you could create the ideal situation, how would you go about it?
I believe in engagement, of student engagement in their learning, so I actively require threaded discussions. Have you had experience with threaded discussions?
Just a little bit.
I mean, I post the topic, and then students have a week to get into the topic mm-hmm. and discuss it among themselves. Now, I lurk, and I count how many responses they have, and I expect responses that are around more than 25 words. I mean, thoughtful responses. I expect 5 within a week. And often they take the conversation in ways I would never take the conversations, and I also don't believe in my getting involved in the discussions. So these are for online courses where you don't see the students. But even in my classes, which I have on campus, I have the students do these threads of discussions as a rehearsal and preparation for classroom discussions.
Is this methodology something that you think is necessary for online teacher education? I mean, would you expect this to be an ideal characteristic of a faculty member who's teaching online?
That's my value, but I would okay. expect that. I don't think when people say, well, online learning is self-paced, mm-hmm. I don't see what I do as self-paced. I mean, there are assignments that are due at a certain time, but it's because there is a heavy emphasis, at least 25% of the grade, on threaded discussions, it then becomes a learning community. Approaches that.
How about the students? Do some adapt better than others to this sort of thing?
Sometimes you get students who don't participate in thread discussions. So I have to remind them it's 25% of the grade.
Okay.
But once they start participating, I think most of my students do what I expect them to do. And I think they go away from their evaluations of the course. They find it a worthwhile course. Hmm. They sometimes complain. You know, a certain percentage will say things like, boy, I wish you would have had optional sessions on campus for us to come in and work on some technology if we're confused by something. And I invite them to come, but I avoid synchronicity in the sense of I don't require them to be chatting at a certain time, and I don't set up anything on campus. If they want me to set it up, I work. If the small group wants to or individual wants to come for help, I'll help them.
Okay.
But we don't have a required presence on campus in my courses.
And what about assessment? That's the thing that a lot of people who are not familiar with online education wonder about. How do you figure out the success or lack thereof that you're having?
Well, I look at, and this is my attitude towards ePortfolios and its assessment. I look at it's a project-based philosophy. If you do the project, you get the credit. And I don't get too heavily into the evaluation. I assume that people did the best they could under the circumstances they were in at the time. I have requirements for the project, and I expect them to be fulfilled if they want to get all the points. But I don't take off a spelling, so to speak. I don't get into the fractions of things. It's usually either a check acceptable or not acceptable. And if it's not acceptable, I send it back for students to edit.
So where's this going? Is it going to get better? Is there going to be more challenges? What you're doing now? How do you see this evolving over the next 5-10 years?
I think that we're having interesting discussions on campus about students who come in with their cell phones and text each other in mm-hmm. class, and some faculty are really upset about it. And we had that interesting discussion on an email discussion mm-hmm. because it's very hard to get a group of people together to have a discussion.
I know.
And it was so we had a pretty explosive email discussion one day. And after a while, one faculty member said, I confiscate the cell phones. And then someone reminded him that's not really a good idea to do that. And then the administration, a couple hours into it, sent an email and said, after someone had said that they require their students to turn off their cell phones when they come to class, the administration wrote, you can't do that because we spent a lot of money on emergency alert systems. And that's one of the ways we contact the students.
Yeah, interesting dilemma.
Yeah, and so one faculty member said, well, I'll leave mine on. I'm on the system. Mm-hmm. And then he did one day, and he got a phone call. So and so it became an issue. I think where is it going? That's just the toe of the camel, so to speak. Next thing is a lot of universities either require or encourage students to have laptops, and they bring them to class.
Right.
And I don't think that makes it interesting. If we follow along that logic, the students could be supplementing what's going on in the discussion in the class. They could find out things that the on the topics that the professors are presenting that the professors don't even know.
Right.
And so it then becomes everyone's learning. And that changes everything. You know, it's what we've been talking about for 20 years now of student engagement. I'm not a sage on stage. I'm a guide on the side. The movement towards a community learning together.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
This EDUCAUSE 2009 Annual Conference Podcast is sponsored by Juniper Networks and Quest Communications International. Thanks for listening.